This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, the KL Summit of 2019 wrapped up over the weekend with at least five MOUs signed at the convention, ranging from youth exchanges to media collaboration to defence and security. Now, just to jog your memory, the KL Summit is meant to serve as a platform for leaders from Muslim countries to meet and discuss issues in the Muslim world. And it was attended by leaders like Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, as well as Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan.
It was also notably not attended by leaders of Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates or Pakistan. But I guess what really came out of the summit?
So this summit did, raise some, some people were unhappy about this. I think the OIC, Organization of Islamic Cooperation, they say it was against the interests of Muslims to convene meetings outside the OIC. But I don't see why not. I mean, it is a free will, isn't it? And in a summit like this, I'm always interested to see who will not show up. So like you mentioned, Imran Khan didn't show up. It was said that he was under pressure by Saudi Arabia for not showing up, but Tun Mahathir denied that. Maruf Amin, the VP of Indonesia, he said he was not well, and so he didn't come. But we are not sure whether he actually sent a representative. So Saudi officials didn't attend. So I guess it was seen to be through a political lens, the implications of having this summit.
So for more on this, this morning we have on the line with us Shariman Luqman, Senior Analyst in the Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies. Thank you very much for joining us, Shariman. So what would you say were the main outcomes of the KL Summit?
Well, the organisers of the summit, the Malaysian government, I think would be very keen to highlight that we sign all sorts of MOUs with all these countries. You know, so there's this MOU between Malaysia, Pakistan and Turkey to establish this television station to fight Islamophobia and all that. Tun Mahathir bringing up issues like using the gold dinar, encouraging barter trade between Muslim countries. Well, what I would say to that is I'll believe it when I see it, because follow-through isn't quite the strong suit of these countries, you know. But I think the real outcome of all this is to put Malaysia back into a position of prominence within the Muslim world. In a way, we vacated that position under the two previous prime ministers. Yes, they tried, but I don't think they had the sort of, you know, the gravitas to sort of bring Malaysia into that position.
Now, the KL summit was seen by some as an international dig towards Saudi Arabia. Is that how you would see it?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a yes and no sort of thing, in the sense that, okay, no, it wasn't a dig at Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia was invited to come for the summit. They chose not to come for the summit. When they saw that Iran, Qatar and Turkey were going to be represented, they said essentially said, no way, we're not going to show up. And they pressured other countries like Egypt not to show up. Of course, UAE, being a close sort of like ally of Saudi Arabia, decided not to come. And they pressured Pakistan not to come. So they made it more of a dig against themselves. You know, but you could say, yes, it was like a demonstration of dismay towards the OIC, because the OIC in recent years has become even more of a foreign policy tool for the Saudis. The Secretary General of the OIC, that position should never, ever be occupied by Saudi Arabia. That has always been the understanding. Just like in the UN, the UN Secretary General should never be from among the permanent five members. You know, should never be a Chinese, should never be American, should never be a British. In the same way, there was this understanding about the Secretary General position of the OIC. But they have decided to occupy that position, and they have made it so blatantly Saudi in its leadership. And they have made other countries choose. If you're going to be with us, you're going to have to show that you're against the Iranians. And that is something that a lot of countries, especially those on the periphery, I would say, of the Islamic world, countries like Malaysia, you know, we don't feel as if that ought to be the choice to be imposed on us. So yes, it is in a way also a signal to the OIC, basically, that the OIC isn't quite what it was before.
How would you say Malaysia is positioning itself within the power dynamics of Middle Eastern countries then?
So this has been an inadvertent outcome of our domestic politics, really. So under the previous government, we were exceptionally close to the Saudis and the Emiratis. You know, we sent troops to Saudi Arabia to provide logistical support for their war in Yemen. And we even provided a small battalion to the UAE under Ops Cobra. It was a very, very strong and very strategic relationship that we established with those two countries. But all of that got entangled in this 1MDB business. Ever since this government came in, the relationship with the Emiratis especially, but also with the Saudis, has become rather problematic. And so we find ourselves being closer to the Qataris and the Turks by virtue of, they are available, they are interested in our in ties with Malaysia, and they don't carry the same sort of the previous government's baggage with them. So yeah, we are not going to influence the power dynamics in the Middle East. Let's be clear about that. We do not have the resources to influence what happens in the Middle East. We are a price taker in the Middle East. We don't set prices in the Middle East. So we need to be also, conscious of the fact that we're not a player, essentially.
Now, before we let you go, as we wrap up 2019, what do you think were Malaysia's hits and misses in the foreign policy arena this year?
Two hits and one miss. First hit was China. I think this government quite successfully brought the relationship back on an even keel. This came with the renegotiation of the ECRL and the award of the contract to a Chinese company for Bandar Malaysia. I think when this government came in last year, the Chinese were sort of like anxious. The Chinese embassy in KL, they didn't quite know members of this government. So there was some anxiety about how that relationship, a very important relationship, would develop. We have very, very serious disagreements with China in the South China Sea. We have a developing sort of like thing about Xinjiang, where our Muslim majority population, they are becoming a bit more concerned about what's happening in that region. But the government has reassured the Chinese that, yes, we want to have a strong relationship with you despite of all our problems. The second hit was Japan. This year in March, the Japanese government, through the Japan Bank of International Cooperation, guaranteed a bond issuance for Malaysia, 200 billion yen over 10 years at an interest rate of 0.65%. That could never have happened if we didn't have a strong relationship with Japan. So he's been to Japan like six times since he's become prime minister. The one miss is India. Now, India has taken a sectarian turn in their domestic politics through what they've done in Kashmir, as with the Citizenship Amendment Bill. In a way, domestic politics in both countries have poisoned the relationship. We've never seen the relationship with India so in such a poor state, really. It's never been this bad. So I don't know whether the Prime Minister ought to have said what he did about Indian domestic politics. There are legitimate concerns to be expressed. I do not know whether he should have said it the way he did. I think that relationship is very problematic now, and I foresee it to be problematic going to the next year, really.
Well, thank you very much, Shariman. And that was Shariman Lokman of ISIS here in Malaysia, talking to us about the KL Summit. Now, we have been running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you whether Malaysia's image has improved or worsened in the international community since GE14. And the result of the poll is that 44% of the 100 votes we've received so far have said that actually Malaysia's image has worsened. 22% said improved, 20% said neither, 12% said I don't know. So that's an interesting result, especially considering that Shariman's estimate of actually we did have one miss in the form of India in terms of foreign policy, but actually did have two hits. So one was China bringing that relationship back to an even keel, and the other was Japan.
Yeah, and we would not have wanted things to go the way they are with India, but I can't really see. Yes, maybe we should have, Dr. Martin, we could have phrased it differently. But at the same time, I think we talked about this yesterday. Sometimes leaders have to step up for what they want to say. But I guess you got to remain consistent on the issues that you are stepping up for.
So the KL Summit was really organized to build networks among Muslim nations, right? But I think like what Shariman says, Malaysia does not have the influence to influence power dynamics in the Middle East. And so we need to pick our battles seriously, mm-hmm. right? And I think the point that Roshan made yesterday, focus on local issues, economic problems, education, and more locally, water cuts.
Indeed. But right now we're heading into the 8 o'clock news. And then after that, we'll be having the breakfast grill where Wang Xiaoning speaks with Raja Hamzah Abidin Raja Nongchik, managing partner of RHL Ventures. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation after the news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.